This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We've been out for the holidays over the last couple weeks, so today we're getting back to things by spending the hour catching up on news surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic and the Omicron variant's continued spread across the country. To dig into some of the recent stats and stories out of Indiana, we're joined by Lauren Chapman, digital producer for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Welcome, Lauren.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a while. I think, now I'm just trying to wrap my head around all the things that have happened in the last 2 weeks. You did a story this morning on the latest numbers around the pandemic. Let's start with vaccines. What does the vaccination rate look like in the state?
Yeah, so 3.56 million Hoosiers are fully vaccinated. And it was rather pleasant for me yesterday to realize that we did not fully vaccinate our first Hoosier in Indiana until January 18th. So all 3.56 million Hoosiers were fully vaccinated in the year 2021. That also breaks down to 8.5 million doses and 6.3 million Hoosiers were partially vaccinated, according to IDOH's data on their website.
Does this mean things are looking up? When I hear a big number like 6.3 million are only partially vaccinated, that gives me some pause.
Yeah, it's not stellar. Indiana, of course, ranks near the bottom for being fully vaccinated. We are one of, I think, fifth worst, if the last time I looked at the CDC's website holds true, among states. So it's not stellar by any stretch of the imagination. That 3.56 million number puts us at about a little over 52% fully vaccinated, which is nowhere near what we would need in order to protect our most vulnerable populations, including Hoosiers who are 65 and older and Hoosiers who are immunocompromised or have other health disabilities. So there's a lot of hesitation to that.
So are you saying that for Hoosiers that have gotten second shots, they're double vaccinated right now. That's the 3.6 million or so?
Yeah, 3.56 is for Hoosiers who are fully vaccinated. That does not include Hoosiers who have received boosters.
And so how do the booster rates compare?
Yeah, so last week during a press conference with the governor, chief medical officer for the Indiana Department of Health, Lindsay Weaver, mentioned that 70% of vaccinations at state sites for, I believe, all of December were booster shots. The IDOH website, I don't think, actually has that breakdown on boosters available. But there's a significant chunk of folks who are getting boosted, but that is still a small fraction of the folks who are already fully boosted and an even smaller fraction of our total population in Indiana.
When it comes to those who are unvaccinated, is there any information on why folks are still remaining that way, aside from maybe folks who just don't believe in vaccinations?
Yeah, I mean, we know a little bit about, like, who is most likely to be unvaccinated, right? Younger Hoosiers are less likely. And in fact, no age group younger than 35 is more than 50% vaccinated. So there's a lot of age has to do a lot with it. And rural Hoosiers are also less likely to be fully vaccinated. In fact, LaGrange County is the only county in the state that has less than 25% fully vaccinated. Looking at the state's zip code map, you can basically paint what the most rural populations are based on what their vaccination rate looks like. I mean, there's also a number of things to take into consideration when talking about, you know, vaccine hesitancy. There are real socioeconomic reasons why somebody may not have been fully vaccinated yet, or reasons why they may not have received their booster yet as well. So it's a complicated soup, but at the end of the day, we are still in a state with only, you know, a little more than 52% fully vaccinated.
Yeah, I think when I think about pushes for vaccination, I feel like maybe a lot of this happens online or in places where folks who don't have access to that won't be seeing the messaging as much. Maybe that's just what I'm seeing, but is that part of the problem?
I mean, it's something that state health officials are certainly talking about. Like I said at the press conference last week, Governor Holcomb was asked about that. You know, what is the state's new message to try and get people fully vaccinated? And his sentiment was, we've kind of done what we can the next step for the state is to work with, you know, trusted community members in order to try and convince people to get fully vaccinated. And so we're seeing, you know, faith leaders and other groups that are, you know, making that effort. But there's also a sizable population, or not sizable, but certainly significant population of, you know, different community members that claim that they do not trust the data. A perfect example being the Attorney General with his comments last week, or week before last.
Right, right. And that will definitely complicate things for folks who are looking to lawmakers or leaders.
Yeah, definitely.
You looked at vaccine data over the last year. What does that period look like when you sort of zoom out from it? Are there any patterns that you've been seeing?
Yeah, I mean, specifically that you know, the younger Hoosiers, the more rural communities, there is, to a certain extent, it's nice to take that look back and realize, oh, wow, we still managed to get 3.56 million people fully vaccinated against this incredibly deadly virus. And also really looking beyond just the vaccination data, it also is nice to see how those vaccinations are working. So for example, in 2020, more than 9,500 Hoosiers died from COVID-19. And in 2021, that dropped to 8,900. So that's, you know, that is significant in that it is because of our vaccinations, we were able to prevent more people from dying. People who are hospitalized, their hospitalization to death rate has decreased somewhat. And so we're, you know, there is progress on that front. It does still require folks getting fully vaccinated and boosted.
Yeah, I think it's hard for folks to think about vaccination when they see vaccinated folks still getting sick, not realizing maybe that they're just not getting as sick and they're not being hospitalized. Because I've heard some folks saying that.
Yeah, which is the point of the vaccinations, right? It's not that you're never going to get sick. It's that you are not going to get severely sick, or if you do get severely sick, you're not going to die. And mm-hmm. that is the crux of what vaccines do for us as well.
You covered Governor Holcomb's press conference last week. What did officials focus on?
Governor Holcomb was definitely coming in and talking about misinformation, especially perpetrated by government officials. I am under the impression he had a bit of a bone to pick with the Attorney General. He also was very much there to support state health officials. So Dr. Box brought up a lot about state testing sites and the lack of availability for testing. That's also news today that the state is pulling back on rapid tests for certain groups of Hoosiers in order to keep those tests available for more vulnerable populations. And then a very interesting point that Chief Medical Officer Dr. Weaver brought up was that the concept of natural immunity and how much that actually provides. She is the lead for the state's vaccine effort. And brought up the concept that based on the data that the state is looking at right now, natural immunity is only providing about a 19% efficacy against Delta and or Omicron. So the trying to break down a lot of that misinformation was kind of the big theme of the press conference.
Yeah, and we're going to speak with some health officials later in the program, but I'm curious on what you found with the status on test availability. It sounds like they're scaling back on certain groups for getting rapid tests. Is it going to be more difficult for people to get tested if they are asymptomatic, for example?
Yeah, so one of the things, the state only has a limited number of tests. Anybody who's had to wander into a Walgreens or CVS recently to try and buy an at-home test or to try and get tested themselves is noticing that there is an increase in that demand. And so the state is attempting to reserve those rapid tests where you're able to get, you know, results very, very quickly. They are reserving that for more vulnerable populations. And I mean, that's the PCR tests, which are the ones that take a little bit longer to get results back. those are also going to be more accurate. And that was something that Dr. Box mentioned during that press conference, that like, rely on the PCR test. The state has those available for a lot more people. And that, you know, it may take a day or two to get your results back, but you know 100% that that is the result of your test.
Well, as we head into the new year, are there any things you're paying attention to with regards to the pandemic?
Yeah, there are, I mean, we are fully in Omicron based on just based on the sheer quantity of new cases. Indiana reported more than 12,000 new cases on December 30th for December 29th data. And that blows our previous records completely and totally out of the water. So it's something that I'm certainly paying attention to for just new cases. The other thing that I am working to pay attention to is hospitalizations. Of course, we've heard over and over again that our hospitals are at capacity, above capacity. I believe Indianapolis hospitals are running at like 120% capacity right now. And so one of the things that I'm keeping an eye on, especially with this rapid increase in new cases, is how that strains hospitalizations. We've heard over and over again, especially in national media outlets, that Omicron is less severe than Delta. The problem being that if you have an overwhelming increase in those new cases, the percent of those new cases that end up requiring hospitalization may be significantly smaller, but it is an order of magnitude larger, more new cases that you're seeing. And so that's definitely something that I'm paying a lot of attention to right now.
That's interesting, too. I've been thinking about how the messaging has been, you know, Omicron isn't as hard on you, for example, especially if you're vaccinated. But then when you get a broader number of people, the chances and the probability of some of those people getting really, really sick, you're increasing that by having such a bigger group. I don't know. Those are just my thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, it's even looking at the breakthrough cases, you're really paying attention to, you know, how much are we hurting our vulnerable populations, our older populations, by not being really diligent about wearing masks, about making sure they're vaccinated. We have to protect everybody in the state.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Lauren Chapman is the digital producer for Indiana Public Broadcasting. We'll be back after a quick break with a panel of health experts to talk about the latest news surrounding the pandemic. If you have any questions or comments, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soap. Today, we're catching up on the latest news around the COVID-19 pandemic and the Omicron variant's impact in Indiana. With us now, we have three guests: Shandy Dearth, director of the Center for Public Health Practice at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at Indiana University; Tom Dzinski, director of epidemiology education at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at Indiana University; and Graham McKean, assistant university director of public and environmental health at Indiana University. Welcome to all of you today. It's a pleasure to have you on with us. And Shandy, I'll start with you. Before we get into all of the details, how would you say Indiana is doing right now at this moment?
So I think Lauren gave a good overview, and unfortunately, we're trending in the wrong direction. Our cases have been setting record levels these last few days, and we're seeing a lot of strain on the healthcare system at this point.
Graham, what are your thoughts?
Pretty similar. And, you know, we know with cases that hospitalizations are a lagging indicator, and as Lauren was just pointing out, even with what appears to be some intrinsically less severe outcomes with Omicron, and there's a lot of us that have either infection-induced or vaccine-induced immunity, and therefore that's why I think we're hearing this mild narrative, which I think is problematic, as a lot of people aren't as concerned as they probably should be. We definitely should be, because of that law of large numbers that Lauren was talking about. If it's, you know, three times less severe, but it infects three times as many people, we're still going to have that rush. And we have an incredibly strained hospital and healthcare system in Indiana right now, over 3,100 hospitalized just for COVID. And we have right now nearly 80% of all inpatient beds in the state, COVID and non-COVID, are occupied. And those are staffed beds. On in District 4, we have zero ICU beds available. That's where West Lafayette is as of yesterday. We have, you know, 4 out of 10 districts with less than 10%. So I think that's got to be the biggest focus. And I think why all of us need to care about this and do, you know, some of those simple, low barrier, non-pharmaceutical interventions to break the chain of transmission to try to lessen that severity.
I do want to ask you about, we often hear about these statistics or numbers about hospital beds and what's available. If you can just tell us, what does that mean for someone who's going to go to a hospital for whether it's COVID or not, and there's zero beds available? Are they going to be turned away? Are they going to be makeshift in a hallway somewhere?
Yeah, it could be all of the above, right? Or they might try to find a bed somewhere else, but those aren't in great supply either. And so I think this is where, you know, COVID is not just, it doesn't just impact COVID. We could be talking about surgeries being delayed, you know, organ transplants, you know, do not get in a car accident or have a stroke in the next several weeks because there's real concern about our ability to get that care right now.
So it would be fair to say that folks could die from things that are not COVID related because of COVID.
Certainly. We've had, I think, millions of probably excess deaths across the globe because of this already. But I think this is just so compounded now with just the sheer transmissibility of this very airborne and very contagious virus, this variant.
Tom, winter is a time when we often hear from health experts and officials that they're concerned. Now we have Omicron spreading quickly across the country. What effect has winter had on cases in Indiana right now?
Yeah, that's a really important point because winter does a couple things. One, it gets us together for holidays, and getting together right now, especially with Omicron and is as infectious as it is, represents a challenge. Second thing it does, winter brings us all indoors. Being outside reduces the risk of transmitting or catching this disease. And when we come indoors because of cold weather and stay warm, our risk goes up. So it's nice to get with family and friends, but the problem is this virus isn't done with us yet. And we have to make sure we are all vaccinated and appropriately boosted to reduce that risk as much as possible.
If you're listening live and have any questions or comments for the show today, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. Last week, the CDC updated their guidance on what people should do after getting a positive test. Shandy, the old guidance was to stay home for 10 days after a positive result. New guidance saying, if you don't have symptoms after 5 days, you can go back to regular activities. Just you got to wear a mask. And I think there's just been so much confusion among this topic with different perspectives being put out there. What are your thoughts on this change?
So, yes, the new change says at the 5 day mark, if you're not symptomatic, you can go ahead and go back to work, go to school, but you need to wear a mask diligently for the next 5 days. And there are some issues with that. You should also consider testing is what CDC is saying in the current guidance. Well, the problem is this plan might look great on paper. It doesn't work in reality because it's really hard right now to get in to get a test appointment. That's part of the reason Lauren talked about how the state is reducing some of the access to some of the rapid antigen tests at the state testing sites for certain age ranges, because we just don't have enough testing capacity at this point. And so depending on that 5 day mark, puts us all in a strain. And so we're hearing CDC might change that suggested 5 day test to a required 5 day test to get out of quarantine early, but it hasn't happened yet. Another big change with this new guidance from CDC is that if you're fully vaccinated but not boosted and you're identified as a close contact of someone, you still need to go ahead and quarantine for at least 5 days. And that's a game changer because that's been our carrot all along. We've said, hey, go ahead and get vaccinated. And once you're fully vaccinated, if you're identified as a close contact, you don't have to quarantine. Well, Omicron has changed the rules on us. So again, the science has changed, so we have to change our approach. And so at this point, that's where we really become dependent on boosters. So you have to be fully vaccinated and boosted in order to avoid quarantine if you're identified as a close contact. And all of that activity is leading to this big shortage in staff, hospitals, long-term care settings, retailers. We're seeing it across the board. And so right now at this point, we're hoping CDC will change the guidance. I know a lot of us in public health have talked about the new guidance. We'd feel more comfortable with a 7-day. 5-day just seems too short. And I realized they needed to shorten it for healthcare workers. I think it made sense for that group. I think the misstep was that they broadened that for all of the general public for the most part. And unfortunately, they were in such a hurry to go ahead and make a change. They put this new guidance out there in a press release, and they didn't follow their regular protocol. Typically in the past, CDC will send out a white paper with all of the scientific findings that led them to make this decision, and that did not happen this time. So I think that's why you see a lot of the pushback against CDC on the decisions that came out last week, because we just don't see the evidence behind it. And those of us on the ground doing the work are frustrated because we're telling people you can go back at 5 days, but honestly, I don't feel comfortable telling people to go back at 5 days and just wear a mask. I think we need more out there in order to protect the public.
Yeah, it is definitely confusing. I would say that that new guidance came down after we were quarantining my husband, who's vaccinated and boosted but tested positive. And it was like, just get back in there. You're staying in there for 10 days. Don't come out. And it was just confusing because it was like without symptoms. But what if you have symptoms after 5 days? Do you still stay in? You know, so it was just kind of very, very confusing. I'll say that.
Yes. Well, and then the week before they changed the guidance last week, CDC had said, hey, if you're in quarantine and say you test positive on Monday, but you don't have any symptoms till Thursday or Friday, then you have to restart that 10-day quarantine all over again that Thursday or Friday. So that was a big change, lengthening the quarantine time. And then they flip-flopped on us just a few days later and cut it down to 5 for everyone. So you can see the confusion. You know, I'm doing this still as a full-time job, and I'm confused. I have to look at flow charts, and I have to reread the CDC guidance every day myself. So I can completely see why the CDC has frustrated and confused lots of people out in the general public.
Well, that makes me feel better. You're an expert, and it was confusing for you because I just kept like rereading it. Like, what am I not getting here?
Yeah, we're all in the same boat.
Graham, what was your reaction to the new guidance?
Pretty similar. I think the 5 days is problematic, and yeah, we're still uncrossing our I's here. And I really would have liked to have seen not only negative antigen testing for clearance, which might be coming now after the fact, after they changed it to begin with. Why not include that from the beginning? But also, there's really no delineation between whether you're vaccinated or not for isolation. And you know, a lot of the data, at least pre-Omicron, showed that, you know, viral shedding decreased if you're vaccinated a little sooner maybe than if you were not. But some people are infectious for 3 days. Some are infectious for 12. And on average, while it might be about 5 or 5 to 7, those are averages and not individuals. And yeah, personally, I would not be comfortable sitting next to somebody on a bus that tested positive 5 days ago without a clearance test. And just because they're only hacking up half of their lung instead of their full lung, yeah. And they think that their, you know, symptoms are resolving, that they can get out. You know, I don't know whether or not people are going to follow this guidance as it is, as, you know, a lot of people don't even wear masks, which are like the lowest barrier, easiest thing we can do to protect each other and others, and to, you know, try to break these links of transmission. So I think there's some flaws there, although I, you know, more than welcome a shortened period, but agree with Shandy that 7 day would have been much more palatable.
Tom, what about you and your thoughts on this? Do you think this was driven more for economic reasons rather than safety?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, we obviously have seen these shortages, you know, just looking at hospitals and long-term care facilities. Graham's right. We have beds. What we don't have is staffing for those beds, right? The doctors, the nurses, the respiratory therapists, those are the people that will take care of us if we're in that bed. And the other thing that I think is really important is that we still don't clearly understand everything there is to know about this virus. And that's frustrating for me as a public health official, is that we understand the vaccine. We know what's in the vaccine. What we don't know are the long-term effects of being infected, right? We know this virus can infect and affect every organ in your body, your heart, your lungs, your brain. What's going to happen 10 years down the road? That we don't know yet. And that's really my message is, we know what's in the vaccine. We want people to get vaccinated. We want to reduce community transmission. Everybody wants to stop wearing masks and return to some sense of normalcy. But we're not willing to take the steps necessary to do that.
You know, Tom, I'm glad you brought up the long-term outlook, because I think that gets missed a lot in conversations. It's all about like what's happening now, and we're not thinking about what this means 10 years from now if we're not being diligent.
Yeah, and that's what we don't understand yet. I mean, knowing everything there is to know about a virus or bacteria, we call that the etiology of it, right? The causal effect of this disease. And we don't understand that complete picture yet. This is a complicated organism, and it takes a while for us to understand the science behind it so that we can affect it, right? What that looks like 10 years down the road for people that have been infected, is it going to affect their heart, their lungs, their brain? We don't know that yet. So the best defense is don't get infected, right? Mm-hmm. Or minimize the risk of being infected as much as possible, which includes getting vaccinated and, as Graham brought up, wearing masks, even if you are fully vaccinated.
Right. And it seems like it's just an increasingly a tricky balancing act for folks when it comes to just the pandemic. We have the CDC guidelines. We have so many things changing. Shandy, Dr. Fauci signaled that pushback to this change has caused some consideration of altering their guidance. Do you think that's likely?
I do. I am hearing they're looking at making that testing probably required at the 5-day mark. But again, getting to a test is a whole other obstacle, which means by default, that would need to push that quarantine time to a longer period. And I realize the federal government's working on getting us home test kits and things like that. That's not going to be here, you know, tomorrow or next week. And so I think we need to change the guidance to make it more realistic. Kids are back in class now. We need better guidance. We need some more resources too. And I know they're working on that, but I just feel like they changed this guidance too early for the general population.
Graham, how do we prioritize public safety while still considering the impact to the economy and society? How is there a balance?
Well, it's a great question. And I've said, I think, almost, well, probably since April 2020, really the best economic strategy is also the best public health one, and that's to control the virus. You know, consumer confidence goes down as, you know, cases increase, but also as you're seeing, essential services, not only in the healthcare system, but we're seeing what we have the airlines now, but also, you know, restaurants, schools, bus drivers, nurses, school nurses, food service employees. We're going to see a lot of kind of de facto shutdowns. And so, again, that's where these layered prevention measures that we know can work should just be implemented. They're really not implemented, right? Like, I was trying to think about it before we came on today, and I'm not really aware of any restrictions in the state of Indiana. There's a mask mandate in Monroe County, and some school districts have a mask mandate. But that's it. So it's not like, you know, we're drunk on individualism in the U.S. and, you know, we like to argue and politicize these things. But like, honestly, I don't really it feels and looks very normal out there. And so I think we could actually start by implementing some of those tools and actually using them. And that in turn will help provide some of that better economic support and continue to have this kind of continuity of operations and staffing that we need.
That's definitely part of the hard part, I think, is when life seems like it's going on as normal and you feel like you're the only paranoid one with your mask and trying to follow the rules. And, you know, I've had people say, oh, we've all gotten sick over the last few weeks and, you know, it's normal.
Yeah, I think I've known more people with COVID the last 2.5 weeks than the previous 2 years. Right. It's just that high. But I think that goes back to this point of a lot of people, this misnomer that it's just the flu or it's just a common cold or a sore throat now with Omicron, and then this mild narrative has its own legs, and it downplays, you know, the societal and the individual risk to this virus. You know, I think individually you shouldn't necessarily be concerned if you're doing the right things, if you're vaccinated, you're boosted, clearly. But still, I mean, sore throats don't kill 1,300 Americans a day like Omicron is right now. And what I think a lot of people aren't talking about is long COVID. As Tom was saying, this is a very strange virus. It can hang out in the body for hundreds of days. It can travel to the brain. There's, you know, these cardio and vascular injuries that we have. And so while we have this very acute healthcare crisis right now and the shortage, I'm also worried about the long-term impacts of this virus with long COVID and the healthcare system to deal with that for some time.
Before we head to a break, Tom, how effective are the vaccines right now against Omicron?
So we know the at least the two mRNA vaccines, that's Moderna and Pfizer, if you're appropriately vaccinated and boosted, they're great at preventing hospitalization, severe disease, and death. We have to say that, look, the vaccine doesn't prevent you from being infected, right? I mean, this is an airborne or respiratory droplet virus, right? You're still going to have that opportunity to inhale or get that virus in your body. What the vaccines do is prevent that replication within the body, which causes severe disease, right? So we reduce the number of virus particles within your body so you don't get severe disease. And both Pfizer and Moderna's vaccine have proven to be very effective against not only Delta, but when appropriately boosted, Omicron as well.
And how likely is it that we're going to start seeing a fourth booster?
That's yet to be determined. I mean, in public health, we don't want to go further than we have to, right? So we don't change vaccines every time there's a new variant or strain. We see, is this effective against that, right? So what we try and do is just do the minimum amount necessary to prevent disease. So until we have more data, more information, we're going to say we're not ready for a fourth booster until we may need it down the road. Now, I know Israel has done a fourth booster already, or a fourth shot, which would be like a second booster. And they've seen very promising results from that, but we're not there yet.
This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're discussing the latest news around the pandemic in Indiana. And with us again are three guests: Shandy Dirth, director of the Center for Public Health Practice at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at Indiana University; Tom Dzinski, director of epidemiology education at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at Indiana University; and Graham McKean, assistant university director of public and environmental health at Indiana University. Before the break, we were touching upon the possibility of a fourth booster, but I want to go back a little bit and ask you, Shandy, how good is the booster right now? So you get the two shots and then you get a third dose as a booster.
It's really made a difference. So what we're seeing is that the people coming into the hospitals are not those who have been boosted. And so we're seeing more of the vaccinated people come to the hospital. We don't really see as many deaths among the fully vaccinated, but the booster really helps keep people out of the hospital. So as Tom said, the booster, you will still be in contact with COVID. At this point, community transmission is so high. So we're seeing lots of people get COVID who have been vaccinated and possibly boosted, but they're not getting so sick that they end up in the hospital, and they're definitely not in the mortality group. So it does make a huge difference, and that's why it looks like that booster will probably become a part of a permanent series. And with that, I can say FDA just yesterday approved a booster for the 12 to 17-year-olds. CDC's ACIP group, that's the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, they meet tomorrow. They are expected to approve that booster for that age group, which is great. That means those middle school and high school kids can get boosted as they're all back in classrooms. And then also CDC effective immediately has cut down the timeline for that booster to 5 months and not 6 for the booster after that second dose of your vaccine. So if you haven't been boosted yet, I really, really encourage you to go ahead and make that appointment at your local retailer, local health department. Go ahead and get that booster because it makes a difference in what we're seeing with the patients.
Does it change the effectiveness if you wait too long to get a booster? Let's say you waited like 9 months after your second.
We haven't seen any data on that. So at this point, I wouldn't discourage anyone from going in to get it. Go ahead and get the booster now, even if you're past that 6 months. We were just saying in the past, you needed to wait at least 6 months. Going longer, we don't believe, has any effect at this point.
When it comes to the Omicron variant spreading so fast, Tom, what is it that's causing such a spread? Is it just the way it's mutated?
Yeah, so it's doing what viruses like to do, which means mutate or adapt to their environment, right? I mean, we're trying to kill it. It's trying to kill us. As I've told my students, we adapt to the environment every year, right? And a couple of months ago, we were all wearing shorts and T-shirts, and now we're in long winter coats and hats and gloves. So we've adapted to our environment, and the virus is doing the same thing. So as it runs into our body's defenses, it mutates. And that's that's really an important message here, is that every infection, every time somebody gets infected, there is an opportunity for a mutation. Now, most of these mutations don't do anything or mean anything, but occasionally a mutation like Omicron becomes a new variant in a population, and we start all over again.
Well, when it comes to Omicron, Graham, are you concerned at all about how the state's healthcare system will be able to handle this surge?
Certainly, because, I mean, as we said, it's already stressed, and we had that kind of ongoing second leg of the Delta wave, which, again, at last check, we're at 3,100 Hoosiers hospitalized. We're back to 100,000 Americans hospitalized. And, you know, we hit the 1 million confirmed cases, a world record globally for this pandemic yesterday. And if we hit 1 million confirmed cases, I think we could easily state that there's probably 2 million plus yesterday, just because we talked about the difficulties in getting a test. Maybe many, because it is, has this less intrinsic severity and other people have some immunity, maybe it's really mild for that individual. They don't get a test. I've had that with some personal family members and friends that have encouraged to be tested, and they were surprised they were positive. But again, back to that law of large numbers, because this has such a high reproductive rate, and that one person can infect many, many others with this particular variant, that's just going to lead to that math problem we talked about, and only foresee hospitalizations rising. I mean, we're just at the crest of the beginning of this wave. I think it will be very short, as we've kind of seen in Denmark, UK, and South Africa. But, you know, again, hospitals are lagging indicators. So I think, you know, what we're seeing now with 10, 12,000, 11,000 cases a day in Indiana, some percentage of that are going to be hospitalizations in maybe, 7 to 14 days. So very, very concerned. I've not felt this level of concern for the healthcare system, and, can't say enough about all the folks that are still continuing to show up and fight. And I think it's going to be a really challenging next several weeks for them. But I also think just generally we need to be prepared for disruptions this month and just be really flexible and nimble.
Yeah, I mean, I've been hearing a lot about the possible disruptions. I mean, definitely they've already started in many areas. I just wonder, it just seems like every time we hear these warnings or health experts like yourselves sounding the alarm, it takes like a month for the rest of the world to catch up, the rest of our society, I guess I should say. And so I don't know. I mean, how do you deal with that?
You cry, you wake up in a panic attack, you do deep breaths. But no, I think it's compounded right now, honestly. I think Shandy was saying earlier, maybe that we think it has a quicker onset. It may be only 3 days before you're, showing symptoms and infectious, as opposed to maybe 4 to 5 with Delta or 5 to 7 with COVID Classic. And because of that higher reproductive rate, that gets compounded even faster. So that's very problematic. And that's why, continue to be on this mountaintop, yelling about all these layers that we, need to implement and the easy ones that we need to implement. I think one of the biggest mistakes we've made, if you remember hot vaccine summer, like in late May, early June, very, very nice time during this pandemic. But we made the mistake. We put all these eggs into this vaccine basket, almost to the exclusion of all other things. And we thought that it was so effective that it could act as a single layer, when a lot of us in public health know that we need to stack those Swiss cheese slices up. And we still need to do that. And that's even more important today with what's going on with Omicron.
Shandy, do you think that with this variant, there could be new variants coming out now that even vaccinated folks are picking up COVID?
Yes. I mean, there's lots of opportunity. France came out, I believe, last night or this morning and said, yes, they've got another variant. And that's not unheard of. We assume we're going to see more and more variants. And that's another reason to go ahead and get people vaccinated as quickly as possible, because the more unvaccinated people we have, the more opportunities we have. And as we've seen, this virus has moved over to animals as well. So there's definitely a chance the virus could jump back and forth, animals to humans, mutate along the way. That's a concern. I can say the variation found in France right now, I think, was found around the same time as Omicron. It hasn't turned out to be a huge concern yet. It's not officially a variant of concern for WHO, but for whatever reason, the media picked that one up today. but there's constant surveillance going on around the world looking for other variations. We know we're going to see more, but again, that's more of a reason to go ahead and get vaccinated so we can slow this down. So we can, honestly, this is going to become endemic. We have to learn how to live with this, but right now we're not living with it. It's shutting things down and it's hurting the healthcare system and it's hurting those people who are going to the hospital for things other than COVID, as Graham and Tom were mentioning. So we have to get past this for this to become kind of our new norm.
Tom, is there anything around testing in Indiana that worries you right now?
So back when the pandemic began, testing was essential, right? I mean, we needed that testing to see, okay, who's infected, who needs to go in isolation, who needs to be quarantined. So that kind of helped us, or was an attempt to get our arms around this virus to prevent spread. As this pandemic wore on and on and on, we've seen trends in testing that have occurred. We saw a huge spike here recently with the holidays, and now we're seeing another spike again in testing with trying to get kids back in school and such. So the lack of testing or lack of availability testing is more based on demand at this point as opposed to supply. So it does worry me because people will say, I can't find a test anywhere, and I'm just going to go out and I'm going to go back to school or I'm going to go back to work after being exposed without getting appropriately tested. And those things we know just continue to promote community spread.
The state said it's prioritizing young people for rapid testing to help prevent spread in Indiana schools. Graham, are you concerned about schools becoming a hotbed for the Omicron variant?
Yeah, I think so, especially those that do not have mask orders in place. And I just think that's just, again, the transmissibility. And there's some inequities across school districts and school systems. There's inequities in which they have philosophies or apply some of these layers. And so I think if a school district isn't considering better ventilation, good masking, good policies or test to stay policies, which, I mean, test to stay would require, you know, serial testing if you're exposed or those kind of things to stay in school. Well, we just said how, limiting the testing supply is. I honestly cannot believe we are 2 years into this and still don't have tests. I mean, the State Department of Health released that press release, I think we were alluding to earlier today, that they're now going to restrict rapid testing to just symptomatic folks 18 and over. And so that's problematic. And if the CDC is about to add a testing requirement for isolation, but nobody can get them, that seems kind of pointless at this point. So I know at the federal level, we're supposed to be ordering $500 million, and you're supposed to be able to sign up and get them mailed to you. I wish that would have occurred before the holidays or honestly a year and a half ago. But I do have some fear for the schools, just because, again, if you don't have teachers that are healthy and able to work, if you don't have cafeteria staff, if you don't have bus drivers, you're going to have some de facto disruptions. And the fact that, you know, a lot of schools are closing maybe proactively or preventatively, I think is a shame, because these are the last things that should be closed, right? The fact that the bars are open, the schools are closing, it's just another example of the failures we've had over the last 2 years in this country with this virus.
With schools closing in some districts, I wonder, are they just delaying the inevitable of a big rise when everybody comes back?
Not necessarily, because that rise is happening now. And I think it's just trying to get, because I really do think this will be a quick rise up, as we're seeing, and probably equally a quick rise down. And so I think that timing makes sense, to maybe just take a pause there for a few weeks just to kind of get through what would otherwise be a disruptive time and maybe a de facto shutdown as it is.
Shandy, what are your thoughts on how schools are handling this right now? Is everything being done that should be? Should they be more cautious?
So again, as Graham said, the critical piece here is masking. And so too many schools in Indiana stopped doing masking. They stopped contact tracing. They haven't been quarantining. And with Omicron being so much more contagious than the previous versions, I can see that being a huge problem with these students. So everyone got together over the holidays. They're coming back into class this week. We really need to make sure masking is always required in the classroom. We have seen last semester that in the schools that required masks on a regular basis and the students were good about making sure they were wearing their masks, we weren't seeing the outbreaks in the schools. Those schools that didn't have the mask requirement had a huge difference in absent students, teachers out, that sort of thing. So we've got to be diligent in making sure the schools are having the mask requirement at the school level. And honestly, that's all based on the leadership from what I've seen at the superintendent level. So if you got a strong superintendent and a strong principal, you can have a very strong response to COVID within the school setting.
Tom, early on in the pandemic, we heard a lot about herd immunity. Is that still a possibility in any way right now, or is this just a talking point that people like to throw out?
I think at this point, it's more of a talking point, to be perfectly honest. With the mutations that are occurring, I think we're going to have what we call an endemic situation where this virus is just going to be around, much like we see with influenza every year, where it just comes around, that we'll have some surges and some spikes. We'll get an annual booster, and we'll move on with our lives. To try and get to herd immunity, I don't know if, one, that was going to be possible, and two, I think we've kind of missed that boat, at least for now.
Graham, what would you say is the most important thing that needs to happen in Indiana right now to get us on the right track?
Empathy, respect for others, understanding that it's not about individual risks right now. It's about societal ones. And put on a first, wear a mask. To wear a better mask because it is an aerosolized virus. It is airborne virus and highly transmissible. And just think about the healthcare system and break the chain of transmission as much as you can. There's going to be a lot of transmission. Clearly there already is, but anything we can do to continue to break those chains and remember that, you know, no child under 5 has had the opportunity to be vaccinated. We have many people with high-risk conditions. We have very vulnerable people in our communities. We have immunocompromised people that even with vaccines, the vaccines may not work for them. Everybody's different, right? And so those are the people we need to protect. So do those layers, start with vaccination, then masking, and so on around those people. But all of that can make a difference. And that's always the hardest thing in public health, right, is we are about prevention and proactive. You only hear about public health failures. You don't hear about successes because we don't, like, somebody taking a rapid test before their holiday gathering and staying home doesn't make the news, but maybe that broke some great length of transmission that could have led to severe disease or death for others. So really just having some empathy for others and understanding the collective and societal risks that we face the next several weeks.
Speaking of sort of things that make the news, I think every so often there's a repeated sort of story of someone who gets really, really sick and is like, now I believe it's a real virus and I want to get a vaccine. Shandy, how many stories are we going to have to hear before it really hits home?
Unfortunately, we're still hearing those stories as we do contact tracing. We hear people say, oh, if I'd known I'd gotten sick, I would have taken that vaccine. And I don't know where they've been living, but we've been trying to get the word out. And what I encourage people to do, too, is look at the faces that you're listening to on television, on the radio, the people who came out against the vaccine, those celebrities, some of the newscasters who came out against the vaccine, those are the people dying of COVID. The people who came out for the vaccine, promoting the vaccine, those are the people who have not died from COVID. They're still around. They're still on the radio. They're still on television. So really think about what camp you're listening to when it comes to making that decision about vaccination. Talk to your healthcare provider. If you've got concerns about fertility, lasting effects of the vaccine, whatever, please talk with your provider, because more than likely that provider can get you to understand that this is a safe vaccine and you need to take this for yourself and for your family and friends.
I want to thank all of you for taking the time to join us this afternoon. Shandy Dearth is director of the Center for Public Health Practice at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at Indiana University. Tom Dzinski is director of epidemiology education at the Richard M. Fairbanks School of Public Health at Indiana University. And Graham McKean, assistant university director of public and environmental health at Indiana University. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam So. Thanks for listening. This is All In.